Welcome to On Trial, starring Mark Ratledge, also starring Sean Comer. Hope you're ready, Hollywood, because you're on trial.
All rise. Court is now in session. The Honorable Harry T. Stone presiding. This is On Trial. And tonight I'm your prosecuting attorney, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Ratledge. And on the docket today is the 2010 remake, The Karate Kid. Or if you're in China, The Kung Fu Dream. Or if you're in Japan, The Japanese Kid or some shit. I don't remember. Anyway, we're doing The Karate Kid 2010, starring Jackie Chan and young Jaden Smith. Here to provide the defense of this movie is Sean Comer, you're not. How do you do, sir?
When the rest is out back laughing and joking, Sean is out front trying not to burn Mark's house down. What can I say? We might as well throw that out there because if the next few months is any trend, y'all are going to be hearing a whole lot of me. So I apologize in advance.
So you're going to be back tomorrow to do Cobra Kai. You obviously have some affinity for this IP. Mm-hmm. Did you see the Karate Kid movies, the Ralph Macchio trilogy, extemporaneously as they were coming out? Did you find them later? How did you come to Karate Kid?
When I was growing up, I saw the original trilogy on VHS. I wasn't really old enough to have seen any of them in theaters. I just kind of skipped the next Karate Kid entirely, as did a lot of folk.
I was going to say, so did everyone else.
I had a dumbass young gamer, Sean, doesn't know any better, affinity for the Karate Kid NES game. And see, and I think as the property goes, that's really about it up until you get to first this movie and then Cobra Kai, which this was the first time I had seen this one.
Yeah, so. I'd never seen this one before. I mean, you know, in 2010, gosh, that's it's 11 years ago, and 11 years ago there was no way I was gonna watch this movie. I just wasn't interested in Will Smith's son. And for me, you know, The Karate Kid, having grown up in the 80s and watching them extemporaneously, The Karate Kid was always going to be Ralph Macchio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like the first two movies. The first one's great. I showed that one to my kids, actually, a year or so ago. And I was like, oh my God, you're going to love this movie. It's a classic. It's great. And at the time, we had like a tent in our living room, and my son just kept going into the tent. I was like, is it over yet? wasn't quite ready for it. My daughter seemed to like it okay. You know, she definitely the bully plot of it, you know, Johnny and all of them bullying Daniel, it bugged her. You know, she just, it was injustice. She didn't like it. Yeah. But yeah, growing up, I loved the first Karate Kid movie, and I really, really liked the second one. You know, he goes to Japan, and he has a fight to the death, basically. And I vaguely remember the third one. I probably saw it once, thought it was the stupidest thing ever, and then after that, I kind of gave up, which, you know...
You're not wrong.
We almost did a Long Road to Ruin on this for that reason, because this was another one where it was like, good, better, off a cliff. Which
I don't know. I mean, off a cliff is maybe a little bit harsh, but it was so much of a retread with so much of it, of the forced Daniel LaRusso heel turn.
Yeah,
that it was just really, really hard to stomach.
But like I said, I thought about how, you know, what we're going to do for the month, and I figured, you know, with Cobra Kai being out, the first three Ralph Macchio movies have been mined to death at this point, that I didn't know if we were really going to add anything to the conversation. But here's one that I don't think gets a lot of play. I think it's it's sort of an overlooked one. I mean, the one preceding this with the girl is just bad. But I think
God, it's terrible.
But this one, like, make and I'll let you do your notes in just a second, but this one made a lot of money, and it's kind of, you know, 50% of the people like it, 50 don't. 50% of the critics thought it was okay, 50 thought it was a pile of horseshit. And I was like, huh, this might actually make for some interesting discussion. And so I gave you the choice. I said, we can either do the one with the girl, it was Hillary Swank, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can either do the one with Hillary Swank that nobody likes, or, you know, and then we can just have fun making fun of. Or we can do this one and have a fairly interesting debate about it. And you were like, let's do this one. And I'm like, great, because I've never seen it before. I will say this, and I'll say this now because I can't really use it as part of my prosecution. Showed it to my kids, and my son's reaction to this was, when they were fighting, it was fine. The rest of it, which I'll give it to him. He's going to be 7 years old, and given the audience this movie was geared towards, I'm not. My one criticism, without getting into the prosecution, was I'm not entirely sure who they thought they were making this for. If this was for kids, it was, wow, was it overly long.
Oh, and I can tell you exactly who they made it for.
Who'd they make this for?
Jaden Smith.
Well done.
You laugh.
Oh, no, I know you're right. That's why I'm laughing.
What this movie is, this is the grilled cheese sandwich that a very well-meaning chef decided to experiment with elevating.
Sure.
With some prosciutto, a fine baguette. He tried... No, what this is? This is a grilled cheese sandwich that Anthony Bourdain got his hands on and tried to elevate into a croque monsieur. You know, I probably butchered the pronunciation of that, and I apologize profusely for that. Yeah, so somewhere, every dead member of the Ramones and Lane Staley are having to hold back Mr. Bourdain from venturing back into the realm of the living to kick me in the dick for my horrible pronunciation. But no, I mean that's about the size of the genesis of this. Mm-hmm. Is this came together because Will Smith et al. Kind of took the original premise, the original treatment for The Karate Kid, and rekajiggered it, refashioned it into a starring vehicle to launch his weird little crotch dumplings acting career. And
I don't want to make fun of Jaden Smith too much because he's in one of my favorite shows of a few years ago, and he's not bad in that. Like, I was all prepared to go come out guns a-blazing that he's the worst actor ever, and, you know, and if it weren't for nepotism, he would have never made it.
He would be right on both counts.
Nah, he was in The Get Down, and he's really good in The Get Down.
Okay, he was in one good movie, but otherwise, Mark, I defy you to tell me that his acting career hasn't been largely contingent on kind of using a combination of nepotism and the law of averages. If we force him into enough roles, eventually he's going to be passable in another one.
Well, that's the funny thing is, I looked at his Wikipedia today. He actually hasn't done all that much. Like, After Earth seemed to have killed his movie career, and he's done a couple of, like, indie flicks here or there, but, like, he doesn't have a long list of projects. And like I said, I was ready to come out, double barrels blazing. But then I saw he was in The Get Down, and I'm like, wow, he was in one good thing. One.
No, and you see, it's like the exact opposite of one of the things that I legitimately admire about Nicolas Cage. And that's the fact that he goes by Nicolas Cage because he doesn't want to get roles based on his lineage. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how, I'll give you an example. Not that long ago. Anne and I, in my effort to introduce her, to continue introducing her, I should say, to professional wrestling, we sat down and watched a future NXT on the WWE Network. For those of you unfamiliar, it's kind of the rise and eventual, you know, evolution and phasing out of Florida Championship Wrestling.
Oh, the documentary you're talking about.
Yeah, their original developmental territory. And they're going through interviews with some of these people who started out there kind of during the halcyon days of the promotion, and some of whom eventually became huge stars in the main roster. and one of the ones was Charlotte Flair. And one of the things that I really rolled my eyes at was she just kind of unabashedly talked about how when filling out her kind of entry survey, they asked who she knew in the wrestling business, and she just wrote down Pops. And nice. God, I did a fantastic Mark Calloway impression with my eyes rolling into the back of my head at that one. However, rightfully so, one of the trainers piped up with, "Who the fuck is Pops? Like, I'm just supposed to know who that is." Well, okay, that's not unlike kind of how I perceive Jaden's acting career. Is, you know, the little weirdo tried, sort of, every time that dad kind of shoehorned him into a role, and it never panned out. He's more like the Eric Watts of second generation child actors.
I mean, I absolutely agree with you. Look, like I said, I think, one, if you haven't seen The Get Down, you really should, especially if you're into like 80s rap and breakdancing. But
it always looked kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I watched it. It wasn't last year, because last year it did nothing. But the year before, I think we went on a cruise, and I watched it while we were on vacation, and it's really good. There's a character on the show. His name is Shaolin Fantastic, and for a little while there, I was insisting everyone in my family refer to me as that.
You're kidding. Tell me that wasn't the name of Jaden's character.
No, it was not.
Okay, I was going to say, Jaden just. What I remember of his public persona was he just kind of came off as trying too hard, eccentric so often that he quickly became one of those pseudo celebs I just kind of hoped would one day just kind of fade away into the background.
All right, so give me some notes on this movie here, and let's get started.
Well, it's really pretty simple. Circa about 2008 was when word surfaced that work had begun on putting a Karate Kid remake together, as we said, produced by Will Smith so he could strap a rocket to Jaden's acting career. And it really models admirably the skeleton, the very general skeleton of the first movie. As we pointed out, it's puzzling that it's even called The Karate Kid, because it has fuck all to do with actual karate. Instead of Okinawan karate, it's now all about Jaden learning kung fu in China, which is why it's referred to as the Kung Fu Dream in China, and just Best Kid in Japan and South Korea. And actually, Sony wanted to change the title of the movie, but Jerry Weintraub, who also happened to produce the original Karate Kid, you know, he said the nay and insisted that it shall still be called The Karate Kid. There were rumors at one point that a sequel was going to move forward, because the movie wasn't entirely unsuccessful. I mean, it averages about a D as letter grades go. But Jaden Smith, Jackie Chan, and Taraji P. Henson were all on board to reprise their respective roles. Brett Eisner was going to direct. By June of 2014, new writers were on board. Eisner was out as director. He would briefly come back to try to kind of bring it around to completion in April 2017. But October the same year, Jackie Chan said that the script just wasn't working out, and they were working on a new one. As of 2021, you know, developmental purgatory. Developmental hell is even necessarily the appropriate term for it. It's just kind of forgotten, many theorized, because Sony cares much more about pushing a Cobra Kai forward. And as notes go, that's really about it. I mean, other than like I said, kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Competently aping the tropes and beats of the original. The only other nod I think you'll find to the first movie is during the kind of kung fu shadow boxing, as I'll call it, sequence. You see Jaden kind of perform a little bit of a half-assed crane kick pose. But I mean, otherwise, that's it. The makers of Cobra Kai have even acknowledged this doesn't take place within the Miyagi-verse.
All right. Your Honor, if it pleases the court, a remake is a funny thing. You're obviously going to have beats and elements of the original source material, but the trick in making your remake stand out is to do something interesting with it. Changing locations, changing actors isn't enough. Trying to make it a more global, more universal appeal in and of itself isn't enough. You have to think long and hard about what it is your interpretation of this thing is going to say. What are you trying to say with this movie? Where are you trying to take it? And here's the thing. The Karate Kid is about a 17-year-old boy who moves to a new neighborhood, and despite his hardest of trying to avoid the situation, just keeps running afoul of the same group of bullies, and along the way he meets a man, Pat Morita, Mr. Miyagi. He becomes his mentor, and through Miyagi, he learns about himself, and he goes through this heroic arc. He gains self-esteem, self-respect. He learns to channel his anger. Daniel, if you'll remember, Daniel's a very, very frustrated individual. He ascends to manhood in a very short period of time. I think people, both young and old, identified with the Daniel character. And that's sort of the lasting effect of the Karate Kid movie, was people could project themselves into Daniel. He's a flawed character, but he goes on this really great arc, and you're there with him at the end. The Karate Kid is compared to Rocky, and in a very similar vein. Rocky's another person people can project themselves onto, here's this guy who's a ne'er-do-well, and he's sort of given up on being a boxer of sorts. He's just sort of, bumming through life, and he doesn't see the value in himself, and then he gets the opportunity of a lifetime, and he goes into a war with the champion, and he loses by decision, I think it is, but he went 12 rounds with the champion, and that's what heroes do. I said this on the George Foreman podcast. If you want to win the hearts and minds of people, you stand up against better or same or better opposition, and you come out of it, and you give it your all, and people will love you for it. All right, so that's like every sports movie that we all love is we want to cheer for our heroes and project ourselves onto them, and you look at the 2010 Karate Kid. I'm not entirely sure, and I watch this with children, as I said before. I'm not entirely sure anyone wants to project themselves onto Jaden Smith. His character, Dre. He's, this 12-year-old kind of bratty kid, and say what you will about Ralph Macchio, but Ralph Macchio had some charisma to where... And I don't want to pick on who at the time, was a 12-year-old child, but Jaden Smith didn't have that kind of leading man, leading, you know, child charisma. He just didn't. So you have a movie that if Jaden's not working, if the Dre character doesn't work, the whole movie just sort of falls apart. And, you know, I said at the top of the show, like, who was this supposed to be for? Is this supposed to be a kid's movie? Are kids supposed to look at him and go, I want to be that kid? And maybe some of them will, but I don't think the majority will want to see themselves as that kid. I don't think there's a lot about him that, you know, that kids would want to be. And then no adult watching that movie wants to be that child. You know, this, it's like, this has to have been made for a child audience, but at over, but at 2 hours and 20 minutes, what child is sitting through this? This is a long slog of a movie. I started this prosecution with the, you know, what are you trying to say with your remake? And here's the thing. Despite the fact that half of it's in Chinese, which, by the way, is my other, is one of my big nitpicks about this, is it's almost entirely in a foreign language, and there's no subtitles. And so it mimics the original Karate Kid in all of its beats so well, in fact, that I could follow what was happening without the subtitles when they were doing it in another language. But if you're not as familiar, and certainly if you're a child watching this thing and you don't know the original beats of the Karate Kid, I tell you right now, the kids I watched it with who have seen the Karate Kid were completely lost. Just, like, what is happening in this movie? So, strange decision to not have subtitles when you have long conversations between two Chinese people in another language and you have no clue what is happening. Anyway, they seem to, on the one hand, they stick so closely to the beats of the original that I feel like they didn't do anything interesting with this. They didn't say anything with this iteration of the Karate Kid. They just did a cover song. However, it's one of these deals where it's like, but we'll change it from California to China, to Beijing. And we'll change Karate to Kung Fu, and we'll change it from a 17-year-old white kid, Italian white kid, with an attitude, you know, Brooklyn attitude, to a diminutive black child, and we'll change the old wise master from a Japanese war veteran to Jackie Chan. And it's like they put no further thought into the movie than that. We'll just move everything to this other setting, this other environment, with these new actors, and that's all this movie's going to be. Which was frustrating to watch. I understand there's only so much they can do with this, but that, again, if you're going to remake a movie, you're going to go out of your way to remake a movie, do something interesting with it. And it's not on me, as the reviewer, as the podcaster, to tell you what more you could have done with this thing. It's up to you, the people in charge of this project, that should, you know, Sean said before, oh, this was Will Smith trying to find a vehicle for his son. Well, then maybe Will Smith should have helped think of a better idea than, well, it'll be in China. Good enough. Beyond that, I don't want to steal any of Sean's thunder here, but the one thing this movie has going for it is when they are fighting, and, you know, and I made a joke about this earlier, my son said, you know, when they're fighting, it's great. And it's true. The fighting is really good in this. The fighting is, you know, one might say the fighting is even better than in the original Karate Kid. Like, when they actually get to the tournament, those kids are, you know, were pretty breathtaking. And it looks vicious. Especially the final fight between Dre and the bully. But that's it. You know, it's almost 2.5 hours to get to one good thing about this movie. The rest of it is just kind of blah. Tajiri, oh god, what is her name?
Taraji P. Henson.
Taraji P. Henson's okay. She's a great actress and everything. I actually like a lot of what she does. But, you know, here it's, she's trying, she's doing the best with the material they gave her, but meh. Not that Daniel's mom was anything, you know, was anything interesting in The Karate Kid, but like, you can kind of, like, she's a fun character, you know, and you can kind of see where she, you know, her character is written where she's trying so hard to get Daniel over the hump and she just doesn't know what to do. And Taraji gets a lot of the same material, but I don't know if, and this just might be a personal thing for me, but I don't know how well it plays. I don't know if she does as a good a job as the original actress does with the same frickin' material. Jackie Chan also tries, and it was funny, I was watching the Midnight's Edge retrospective of the Karate Kid movies, and they talked about how in the original they almost cut the scene where Miyagi gets drunk, but they ended up leaving it in the movie, and it's an important scene. It's one of those scenes that brings Daniel closer to Miyagi. You learn about Miyagi, you know, about how his wife and his child had died, and, you know, and how it affected him, and, you know, and that's how Daniel and him had this, you know, kind of surrogate father-son relationship. It's an important element of the movie. They try to do that in this one with Jackie Chan and Jaden, who don't have, to me, a tremendous amount of on-screen charisma together. On-screen chemistry, I should say. I don't know. I did not see in this movie the same kind of chemistry that Pat Morita and Ralph Macchio had, to where you could buy a surrogate father-son relationship. I think they tried. I think they played the notes, but it doesn't have the same soul. And the tragedy that they gave Jackie Chan to work with was that he was driving a car fighting with his wife. And which reminds me, we forgot to do the plot synopsis, but that's okay. It's been a while since I've done this show. But they're driving in a car. He's fighting with his wife. He doesn't even remember why they were fighting. And he loses control of the car, and they get into a car accident. And the wife and the kid die. Not as strong as the Miyagi story. I think they tried. I think they thought they were doing a good thing with this. They were, you know, thought they were doing something interesting with it. It doesn't quite ring. It doesn't sing. So those are my major points with this. Too much like the original to be interesting, not enough like the original to be good. Jaden Smith, this isn't his worst role. That comes later. But he's not great, and he's not leading, leading man material. So when so much of the movie rests on his shoulders, this makes it harder to watch. And while China in and of itself is a magical and interesting place, that's not enough of a reason to watch this movie to be like, oh, look, well, it takes place in China. Well, lots of movies take place in China. So what? Your witness, sir.
So, earlier I referred to this movie as an elevated grilled cheese sandwich. I never said that didn't work at all. Actually, oddly enough, and I didn't expect this would be something I would be saying, Jaden Smith's comparatively lesser charisma when you stand him up next to Ralph Macchio actually allows him to be just a little bit more, dare I say, earthy, less over the top. It's a little more believable that you're watching a real awkward adolescent. One of the problems sometimes with the way even his dad has sometimes played a lot of roles is that it kind of takes you right out of whatever you're watching. I've said before that historically, 90 times out of 100, Will Smith will settle for playing just one role and one role only. Will Smith. Fighter pilot Will Smith. Alien hunting Will Smith. Rootin' tootin' lawman of the Wild Wild West Will Smith. so on, so forth. You get the idea.
Last Man on Earth, Will Smith.
Yeah, there you go. That's another one. Although I would say that's one where he's more hamstrung by a bad studio decision as far as the ending goes. But, you know, we can talk about that if we ever get around to I Am Legend, because I have thoughts on that. Anyway.
And wait, and don't forget, we forgot one more. Muhammad Ali, Will Smith.
You know what? That one is one that I will defend as arguably the role that Will was meant to play his entire life.
Yeah, I'm having fun, but I like Ali.
Yeah, he knocked the fuck out of that one. But was the movie simply called Concussion? The one where he starred as the doctor who basically outed the NFL as knowing more about head trauma than they were letting on.
Maybe. Let me look real quick. Keep going.
Yeah, you see that one, God love him, he tried, but there's the moment in the trailer where he's looking at the microscope and he actually does the cliched, "My God." That ensured that I would never want to see that movie because I knew that I would not be able to keep a straight face.
Yep, that's the one, Concussion.
During that scene. quite possibly right up there with The Pursuit of Happiness among the most Oscar baity roles to ever bait for an Oscar, at least in Will's career. But anyway, I'm digressing at 150 miles per hour, so before I slam into a brick wall and reduce myself to the consistency of applesauce, allow me to hit the brakes. No, he doesn't have Ralph Macchio's natural suave charisma, which is good because that worked in a pure grade A pasteurized 80s cheese movie. But here I can see how they would have wanted and even needed Jaden to go in a different direction so that he wouldn't just seem like he was trying to out Macchio. And you kind of need him to start off as a little bit of a punk ass. Because especially in a movie like this, you have to have somewhere to go. You know, you don't negotiate for the bullseye for exactly what you want. You have to know kind of when to bid a little bit low and a little bit high, because you have to give yourself some runway one way or the other depending on which way it is that you want to go. Because awesome kid becomes more awesome more often than not is not going to lead to a very compelling movie. In fact, what you'll more often get is something that just doesn't register, doesn't stick with you, it doesn't inspire you, you don't necessarily identify with it. It's the reason why some people have a hard time really investing in Superman. Because unless you have a really interesting idea, again, it's awesome man being awesome and becoming progressively more awesome. And that's it. Here, you need Jaden to be insufferable. The same way if you're watching a Miyazaki movie, you sometimes need the hero or heroine to start off as a little shit, so that way they can be more profoundly shaped by their experiences. Mm. Which is kind of what you have here, is you have a broken kid who is a stranger in a strange land. He never wanted to leave Detroit. As we learned, dad's already dead. Mom has been transferred. Mom is trying to be as peppy and optimistic as possible. Often you kind of get the impression, for the sake of bolstering the morale and spirit of her kid. Whereas, meanwhile, he's just trampling one landmine after another. And it works. Again, it works. It gives him somewhere to go. You know, maybe he's not necessarily charming in every social pratfall that he takes, but we can still watch him struggle and know that it's going to be interesting to kind of see where he goes as he goes along, because it's called The Karate Kid. We pretty much know roughly what we're going to be getting. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. You know, we get to watch him develop not only self-respect, but respect for others, respect for the culture around him, wanting to do better, be better, make the best of what's around him. And at the same time, there's his kind of chemistry with Jackie Chan, which I beg to differ as far as those two having no chemistry. It's just a different kind of chemistry. Pat Morita, his Mr. Miyagi, was a grandfatherly loner figure, which sufficed for the story that they were telling. This one, Jackie took Mr. Han in a completely different direction. And it was a good idea, because instead, they're two kind of broken, incomplete people. Except there's a lot more mystery as to what broke Han until we get a little bit later into the movie. And you really see them forge a bond that reminded me of Rocky Balboa and Adonis Creed.
Apollo.
A little bit.
Oh, shit. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, I was talking about Creed.
Yeah. Nope. I got it.
That was kind of what it reminded me of by the end of the movie. And again, and I mean that in a good way, because I genuinely loved Creed. I haven't seen the sequel, but I loved the first one. And, you know, yes, it's a longer movie, but in a way I kind of like that. I kind of like that because, number one, I really thought that China was a fantastic setting. It made for much more of a fish-out-of-water culture shock element than the kid who just kind of went from the kind of rough-hewn East Coast over to the bright sunny West Coast. Even if that kind of worked at the time because of the tropes of the 80s. But here, you're talking about a young black kid from Detroit who all of a sudden has to make his way in this ancient culture, steeped in religion, not necessarily rejecting of modernity, but it's not the linchpin of Chinese culture. And I think it makes for a much more stark frustration. And a much more apparent one, even if it's not necessarily a relatable one, because, you know, not all of us have gone to live across a whole ass ocean. But it was interesting in its own way. Does it drag? Yes. Yes, I will concede there are plenty of times where it does drag a lot. But what I did like about it was all the action sequences. Believe it or not, I actually preferred a lot of the early movie brawling and chases over the really bombastic, over choreographed final tournament with the Kung Fu Kanranas, where the whole thing really breaks down into baby's first kumite. I'll get to that, believe me. But all in all, you know, I can't fault this movie for not being the first one, because while it's kind of trying to pay homage to it in its own way, it is its own thing. It is something that's more serious, more often than not, much more down to earth. Even if, you know, it obviously has its over the top elements, like how, my God, this community takes kung fu as seriously as Texans take high school football. It's like I said, it's absurd, it's over the top, it's the kind of thing that Cobra Kai kind of mocks in its own semi self aware way. But at the same time, you know, by the time the training between Mr. Han and Dre starts, I really kind of can't help but root for him a little bit, and hopefully see that he starts to get it and starts to kind of take something more substantive away from his training. And you know, he stumbles with it, I think, a little bit more than Daniel LaRusso does in the original. It's not like it all just kind of comes to him quite as easily. Even after he really embraces the spirit of kung fu, there's still so much that he clearly doesn't get, so much humility that he kind of still needs to have sort of drilled into him. And it makes for a much more satisfying road to the conclusion, to kind of still see those rough, unpolished edges. The soundtrack I really enjoyed more than I thought I would. It had a really understated score about it, but an extremely dramatic one. Right up until, again, we get to the end, and all of a sudden they start really cramming in the kind of anachronistic modern music. Like kind of shoehorning in Back in Black and the Chili Peppers' fantastic cover of Higher Ground. Like, I mean, Low and Poker Face, those at least made sense for the scene that they were in. But the other two was just kind of like, Back in Black doesn't even fit thematically with anything that's going on right now.
I'm gonna throw something at you. I want to see if you agree, or if this is something that you'll defend. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all know Johnny is the villain. He's the bully of the first one, but equally so is Kreese. And and for the amount of screen time that they give Kreese, he makes the most of it, and he's one of the great villains of, you know, of the 80s sports movies, right? Mm-hmm. They gave Kreese a lot of really great lines. You know, especially like when Miyagi goes to confront him, they do the exact same scene here, only you don't get the exchange between Kreese and Miyagi, you know, that you don't get the exchange with Han and whoever the name of the teacher is, like you do with Kreese and Miyagi. And the reason why I bring that up, and why I think it's important to note, and it's yet another thing wrong with this movie, is he's such a dick in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that because you can clearly understand him. He says things like, "Nobody touches the prima donna," which made me laugh every time I heard it. And you don't get any of that with this movie, and I think that's to the movie's detriment. That not, you know, there's so much focus on Dre and Han, and not enough character building of anybody else in this movie.
No, it's, and I agree. It is indefensible. because it reduces them to kind of the stock villains of almost any martial arts movie of this kind, and that is you have the sensei or the rebellious student who has perverted the pure nature of the fighting form, and it's kind of what we have here, except that the opposing kung fu sensei. See, I couldn't even tell you his name without looking at Wikipedia right now. That's how memorable he isn't.
You might as well just call him Chinese Crease.
Yeah. He doesn't have the unabashed dickishness of Crease or the sliminess of Terry Silver. I got to admit that the kid is not a bad Chinese Mike Barnes or Johnny Lawrence, depending on which movie you're kind of hearkening to.
You also don't go. You know, I mean, you can assume from the interaction they're having. There's, you know, when the kid walks over and picks on Dre the first time, it's, you know, Dre is interacting with the girl. So let's talk about the original Karate Kid for a second. So, Elizabeth Shue is on the beach. She's not with anybody, and her and Daniel start palling up together. You know, they're kicking the soccer ball around. They're playing in the sand, et cetera, et cetera. Johnny is alerted to this and comes over, and he's like ignoring Daniel, and he looks over at Elizabeth Shue, and he's like, "What the fuck? Like, we were a thing. Why are you talking to him?" And then Daniel inserts himself in there. He's like, "I'm not even talking to you. Go away." And Daniel's like, "Well, I'm not going to get pushed around." And he gets his ass beat. All right.
it's
very clear why Johnny got involved with Daniel in that scene. It's not clear why that kid got all up in arms with Dre talking to the girl in the park.
Well, I mean, it's one of the beats, the escalation of the first movie that this one is kind of trying to ape. In that there's that brief little encounter at the park where they're being kind of sweet to each other. They're having a little bit of banter. 12-year-old, you know, mini Zabka comes ambling over to start something, because apparently their families are really close, which I think maybe implies that there is some kind of unspoken arranged marriage that's already being plotted, or something like that. Maybe
any of that would have been nice to know within the movie.
Yeah, and Dre tries to downplay it until it does come to blows. He gets his ass handed to him. Most of the rest of the first act of the movie, he's just kind of being harassed with no provocation whatsoever. But then, much like the scene with Daniel and the showerhead and the head in the stall, you know, comes the moment when Dre overplays his hand, you know, douses him with the dirty water, and then what happens next, you just kind of go, "Nah, I'm not feeling sorry for you. You had that receipt coming."
But that's the thing, like, here's the thing. If you've never seen The Karate Kid, you should be able to follow the beats of this movie without it being explained to you. They don't do a great job of that. That's my major criticism of this.
Not a great one. I will say, now, in all fairness, number one, did you really watch a version with no subtitles?
Yeah.
I read it on Amazon. I had subtitles.
Oh, I bought the damn thing and I got no subtitles.
Maybe that's why. I had subtitles, and actually no issue whatsoever with the dialogue. It's just that I think it's a difference between, and I don't know, depending on how you want to look at it, you could spin this as a negative or just something neutral, they're trying to be so faithful to the Chinese atmosphere that I wonder if a lot of the acting maybe wouldn't play better among Chinese audiences, because stylistically maybe that was a little bit more what they were used to. and maybe kind of the unspoken language or just the delivery just didn't quite register with Western audiences quite the way it did with the delivery of, you know, Martin Cove and Zabka and Macchio in the original.
Well, and that's the thing. Again, I ask, who are you making this for? If you're making it for a worldwide, you know, like this is the criticism of the Transformers movie, isn't it? Well, at least one of them is these movies feel so broad that, you know, they are for the widest possible audience you can possibly gather into one place. And so there's no, they have no distinct quality. They're too broad. And there's so much action and hardly any dialogue in the average Transformers movie. Why? Because you're trying to make this for a general audience, you know, across cultures from one end of the earth to the other. Whereas The Karate Kid was clearly made for a, you know, an American audience and an adult American audience at that.
Yeah, I think it was, I think the effort it was making was it was really trying to convey kind of a reasonable facsimile of Chinese culture to American audiences. And don't get me wrong, part of me kind of admires that, actually. Yeah, I can appreciate that. I got to think that's one of the reasons why Jackie Chan was so keen on wanting to have something to do with this. I got to think that if they had, that if they really had kind of cocked that element up, Jackie would have probably noped right out of there. But no, I mean, it's hard for me to hate this movie for not being something that it was never intended to be. And it clearly was not intended to be just a rehash of the Western atmosphere, a lot of the lightheartedness of the original. But it took things in a much more ambitiously dramatic direction. I think it tried to keep things a lot more earthy. The action I thought was a lot more hard hitting and easy to appreciate than the first one. Even if, come on, the final tournament sequence, 99% of that shit would have probably gotten somebody disqualified and probably guaranteed a ban from ever competing in that event ever again. Again, like I said, Kung Fu Kanrana.
I have a question for you when you're done, by the way.
Fire away.
Okay, so if I'm let's adjourn here in sidebar and just talk about the movie for a second without doing a prosecution and a defense. Yeah. I didn't hate it. I sat and watched it. I was bored through a lot of it.
I can see how you'd feel that way.
You know, and it was more of like, I know every single one of these beats, and I'm not interested in what you're doing here. As I said before, I like the fighting. But I'll tell you, when I said that we were doing this, the reaction I got online, you know, like my buddy Chuck from high school was like, guilty. Robert Winfrey was like, let me tell you 12 things wrong with this movie. And, you know... Like, Jesus Christ. Like, this garners an intense amount of, like, I mean, it's not Ghostbusters 2016 or anything, but it's kind of, like, in the ballpark of that level of intense hatred. And I feel like this movie sort of lands somewhere between, if you were the intended audience for it, you're sort of lukewarm on it, and if you were, like, my age, maybe even your age, it's like, you fucking hate it. And I'm like, but why? I don't think this movie is worth being hated.
No,
and I don't think it's. And I don't think it's like the worst movie ever. But no. My question to you, and I don't know if you have a ready answer for this, but why do you think people react so negatively to this movie?
In large part, I think it was because they called it The Karate Kid. And, I've made my jokes about, ha ha ha, there's no actual karate in this, ha 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 ha. No, seriously, you saddle a movie with that title, and it comes with a certain expectation. And, you know, among Western fans, movie fans in particular, Okay, in fact, let's narrow that down even further. American movie fans in particular, that comes with the expectation that it's going to lockstep with the spirit of one of the quintessential trope fest sports movies. Like it's right up there with the Bad News Bears and the Mighty Ducks in terms of what you expect. And you expect something that's going to be super lighthearted, cheesy in all the right places. You know, like you said, Daniel LaRusso as our handsome, charismatic, plucky underdog leading man that we're rooting for the whole way. Whereas in this case, you just don't get that. You just get something that's trying to tell a much more honest, dramatic story from that same premise. Jackie Chan is not very likable for most of this movie. Not remotely the way Pat Morita was right from the get-go in The Karate Kid. Jackie's kind of a dick.
Mm-hmm.
He is an asshole for the first little bit that we see him. He's not even terribly likable once he does finally take Dre under his wing. But it's because I think Jackie was kind of trying to be a true actor and tell a real story here. You know, we've off and on kind of referenced the Family Guy joke where Peter and Lois are sitting in the audience of, I think it's Uncle Vanya, and they're listening to the dialogue, and Peter all of a sudden just screams out, "For God's sake, somebody throw a pie!" You know, and this is not that imminently quotable movie. There is no sweep the leg, yeah, put him in a body bag, wax on, wax off.
No, what we got was hang your coat, take off your coat, you know.
And you know, I will admit that part did drag on way, way, way too long. Overall, the montages, to be honest, were pretty damn good. I defy you to tell me otherwise.
No, and the best parts. This is so funny because there's so many movies where you can say this where, they remade a movie because now you can do better special effects with it than you could do 20, 30 years ago, that kind of a thing. And so, the special effects look amazing now for this movie. The fighting looks amazing for this movie. That, you know, everything has evolved. But a lot of those movies lose the heart and soul of what made the movies really spectacular. I don't want to pick at Ghostbusters 2016, and I know somewhere out there Robert Winfrey's going to listen to this and be like, but it deserves to be picked on. It deserves to be thrown over the pinball machine. All right, take it easy.
You know what? In fact, I will throw this one out there because that is actually one where, just as a quick aside, I've meant to watch the director's cut for a while because one of my favorite film commentary YouTubers, Leon Thomas, he runs the superb channel Renegade Cut, made a video some time ago where he talked about how the director's cut of the new Ghostbusters was actually really damn good, and he made some convincing arguments that have left me wanting to check that out. I've just never quite gotten around to it.
One of the comments that the Red Letter Media guys made was,
oh god.
I mean, I don't always agree with everything that they say, but I think they make some salient points. And one of the things they talked about was that in the original,
they're on my Mount Fuckmore of critics of online critics who have ruined criticism, sandwiched squarely between the assholes from CinemaSins and Doug Walker.
Okay, I still like them, But their criticism of Ghostbusters 2016 was, when you look at the original, they had all of this ghostbusting equipment, but it was there because they needed it to, you know, they needed it to do things in the story. They were utility items. The movie wasn't about them. So much of Ghostbusters 2016 is developing those tools. A big part of the plot is them experimenting and creating the Ghostbuster materials, like the Ghostbusters machinery. And the comment that got made, if I remember correctly, was like, that fundamentally misses the point of Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters isn't about catching ghosts. It's not about the mechanisms of which you use and tools to catch the ghost. It's about these three schlubs who, you know, and this is sort of adventure that they go on. And there was a little bit more to it than that. But it wasn't about the tools. And so much of 2016 is about the tools and the cool things you could do with them. Another thing that from Red Letter Media. You know, one of the criticisms of Star Wars is so much of it is about lightsabers now. It's like, again, it was a thing that a guy had that he, you know, that was a part of who he was, but that wasn't the sum total of it. And now, like, the fans have so much bought into what they perceive Star Wars to be that all Star Wars is about lightsabers.
Okay, number one, that is the very least of the problems of what has become Star Wars. That's a conversation for another time.
Yeah, no, I don't want to get off on that. But that's the point I'm making about Karate Kid 2010, is that it's not just about karate and fighting. And so it's nice that the fighting is crisper and more violent and better in a lot of ways than the original, which was much more simpler and less complex and certainly less vicious. But who gives a shit?
See, but that's the thing. That's the other problem with the Red Letter Media guys and their criticism of Ghostbusters, is you're deriding a movie for not being something that the people who made it never intended it to be. Maybe they meant to make a movie where they took their own direction and they did put a little bit more of a fun emphasis on the gadgets and developing them. Maybe that was what they wanted to do. Maybe that hit with you, maybe it wasn't. But, you know, it doesn't make sense to make that a critique when, you know, again, they weren't trying to necessarily make a point for point remake.
Now, don't get me wrong. This was a major contention between me and Robert. I actually like Ghostbusters 2016, and that was what I said at the time when we reviewed it. I like the fact that they took the focus, you know, and sort of shifted it to like the development of their tools and techniques, and those were made for some very funny scenes. Mm-hmm. But I accept the criticism as valid that you're focusing on the minutiae and not what the movie is really supposed to be about.
Well, right, but my point about that is that's more so saying that's why I didn't like it, and that's fine. That's fine. You know, you can like or not like something for whatever reason. You know, you're totally entitled to that. That's valid, but I don't think that's necessarily a strong objective criticism of something, because then the people who make it can just kind of furrow their brow and just say that wasn't what we were trying to make the movie about. We weren't trying to make Karate Kid 2010 this rehash of a really lighthearted, quotable 80s sports movie. That wasn't our thing. That wasn't what we were going for. We were going for something that was more of an authentically Chinese drama with just a little bit of East meets West humor.
I think the other thing that you have to take into consideration, and I think this is as good a place to any to round this discussion to the end, is, was this a worthy endeavor? Did they do anything with this movie it made like upteen $1 million. So, you know, if you're for purely financial reasons, it was totally worth it. But you know, from an artistic sense, from a thematic sense, did this movie say or do anything with this property that was worth the effort? What do you think?
I think it did. I think it did in terms of at least getting to kind of, I mean, yes, and I've cracked my jokes and I'm done with them about the whole trying to force Jaden Smith on an unsuspecting world. we're just gonna cast that aside. But they had a vision for what was a fairly simple by the numbers concept. And while I think honoring the spirit of the original, they wanted to say maybe we can do something else with it and see what comes out. Maybe not necessarily trying to make something that was better, but something that was their vision for it. And there are a lot of people that I'm sure will probably roll their eyes when they say this. But the other downside that you have about the Karate Kid series and a lot of other franchises in the 80s is you didn't have a whole lot of young black heroes that you could look up to.
No one should roll their eyes at that. That's the truth, and well, that's a valid point.
Well, yeah, but there are people who probably say, "Oh, there you go. You're bringing race into my kung fu choppy kicky movie." But no, but it's true. At the time when the Karate Kid came out, you wouldn't have seen very many leads in a mainstream movie of that kind. And yeah, we can say what we will all day long about, you know, the whithertos and why-fors and pros and cons of Jaden Smith's performance. But the fact remains, it was still an adolescent black kid that was portrayed in this leading underdog role. And I think he was portrayed in a way that was fairly relatable.
That's a great question. You know, I wonder, because I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, a middle-aged white guy with two white children, and we're like, I don't really see, you know, my argument earlier was, how could you possibly see yourself in this bratty little kid? I'm actually wondering how many black kids saw this and was like, oh, I want to be Jaden Smith. I want to be that kid. I want to be Dre.
You know what? They might have. Because at the time, if you saw a young adult black man or a black kid in a movie like this, they were relegated to back in the 80s, comedy relief or a sidekick role, something like that. You know, you didn't necessarily, as a young viewer, I would imagine, get to really see yourself in those characters and maybe see something not only that you could relate to, but then consequently something that you could aspire to. And it's why I have kind of really turned a corner and I have really come to see the value in authentic representation like that. You know, he feels like a young black kid that you would meet from a big city. He doesn't feel, you know, over the top or contrived or reduced to a stock character. And that's where, all kidding aside, I have to give Jaden some credit for that. And it's one of the reasons why I like the fact that he kind of didn't go full Will Smith with the performance. It's kind of like how, unfortunately, for as much as we love Pat Morita, and God love him, what was not to love about the man? The Mr. Miyagi character, unfortunately, for as much heart and genuine feeling as he put into it, it kind of became the trope. It kind of became the stock character for the wise old Asian master. You know, the inscrutable teacher. And for as memorable as that was, I don't think it necessarily always worked in representation's favor. In terms of presenting something that was real, and that's what I like, and that's what I like about what I liked about Mr. Han. Is, you know, this wasn't Jackie Chan in Shanghai Noon or Rush Hour. This felt like a real haunted, broken man.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Yeah, and you see, I'm so glad that we didn't get repartee like that. I'm so thrilled that they didn't go that route. That was such a relief, and I gotta say, it was something that I kind of expected at times, and I'm so happy to be proven wrong. But it felt like Jackie wanted to take this and kind of honor the spirit sort of Mr. Miyagi. But to also bring it around to someone who felt a little bit more complete. And yeah, the whole jacket thing really got played out way too far and way too long before finally delivering on it. Everything else about the performance I sincerely enjoyed, and it goes to show that, you know, Jackie is not just a bunch of flashy punches and kicks. The man is an actor.
All right, I think that's where we're going to end it for tonight. The next time we do an On Trial will be, we're doing something really weird next month. I decided to dedicate an entire week to things done by Ed Brubaker. So we're doing one of his.
I'm glad you did.
We're doing one of his comics. We're doing a show that he wrote that ended up on Amazon Prime, and then we're doing a movie that was actually. I don't think he worked on the movie. I think the director that he worked on the television show with, Too Old to Die Young, also directed this one. If I remember correctly, that's the connection that I made. So anyway, we're going to do kind of a bizarre movie called Only God Forgives next month. So that'll be the On Trial for the month of February. As I said, tomorrow, Sean will be on the Cobra Kai Season 3 review, along with Andrew and David, who were just on our Mandalorian review this past week, along with Alexis Haina. We also reviewed Impact, Hard to Kill. We reviewed Star Wars, The Bounty Hunters, Galaxy's Deadliest. We did another chapter in the history of boxing on George Foreman. We looked at The Boys, Volume 2, Get Some, The Boys, Season 2, Transformers, War for Cybertron, Earthrise, AEW, New Year's Bash. And next week, we've got The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Issues 6 through 8, the last part 4 of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the television show. Sean will be on that one as well with Alexis Haina. We'll be doing our first Metal Hammer of Doom of 2021. We'll be looking at Italian progressive metal band Labyrinth, Welcome to the Absurd Circus. And then finally, the Podsman and I will be reviewing WWE's India Special Superstar Spectacle. And then Alexis Haina and I will be reviewing the next part of the Looney Tunes cartoons from HBO Max. That's the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network right now. Sean, what do you got going on?
Well, next month, if you don't mind my plugging a few of the shows that I am going to be on, February 2nd, I am going to be joining Mark and the crew to review the 2021 Royal Rumble. Just a few days later, February 4th, I am going to be joining them to review the new Weezer album on Metal Hammer of Doom. February 11th, it is the Korean space epic Space Sweepers coming to Netflix and subsequently coming to the Rattlington Broadcasting Network. February 22nd, I am going to be joining them to review Ed Brubaker's Scene of the Crime, because I love me some Ed Brubaker. February 24th. I'm pulling double duty. I got two podcasts in one day. It's Only God Forgives here on Trial. And then the same day, I am going to be joining them to review WWE Elimination Chamber. As for more recently, it finally happened. It finally happened and was probably about ready to bust a foot off in my ass if I didn't do it. But I am back to streaming as of last night. And in fact, it's about 9:30 p.m. Central Time right now. In about 30 minutes after I get off of here, I'm going to be back on twitch.tv/ComerCodex tonight, playing a few hours of Kingdom Hearts. And then tomorrow, January 21st, I am going to be back on for an early stream from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Central Time, playing probably either some more Kingdom Hearts or maybe a few hours of Apex Legends. I'm still working on a proper schedule because Ann and I both now have full-time jobs and we're trying to kind of get our schedules worked out. So the best way to keep track of when I'm going to be streaming is to either follow or subscribe to my channel on Twitch and turn that notification bell on, or to follow me on Twitter at ComerCodex, and yeah, also turn those alerts on because I always tweet, if not right when I'm going live, about an hour usually or so before.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us for On Trial tonight. Court is now in recess. Be well, be safe, and behave.